676.
What? What? I couldn't hear that last part.
That's 845-9676 or toll free 1-800-585-HFCC, extension 9676.
Run! Save yourself! It's coming!
Frankie, what's wrong with you?
The April tax deadline, it's getting so close, and I haven't even started my paperwork.
Oh, no.
Pardon all the drama, but if you've waited until the last minute to do your taxes, there's a better alternative to pure panic. Just go to www.irs.gov, your reliable source for all things taxes.
Get a grip, Frankie. We'll figure it out.
But the forms, the math, it's terrifying.
That's www.irs.gov, where you'll find all the information you need, like how to e-file your taxes so you don't miss that April deadline. All the forms are there, too, including the 4868, the one you need to file for an extension.
See, Frankie? There is hope!
We're gonna make it!
The odds of becoming a signed artist and having 3 number one albums? 1 in 100 million. The odds of going on to win 6 Grammy Awards? 1 in 1.4 million. The odds of this performer having a child diagnosed with autism? 1 in 110. I'm Toni Braxton, and I encourage you to learn the signs of autism at AutismSpeaks.org. Autism Speaks. It's time to listen. Brought to you by Autism Speaks and the Ad Council.
Good afternoon, this is WHFR Dearborn, and this program is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. Today, my special guest is Cindy Gray. She is a writer, yoga teacher, handwriting analyst, speaker, and dream expert. The reason I mentioned dream expert last is because that's what we're going to be talking about today, our dreams. Welcome to the show, Cindy. How are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Well, I'm very good. I'm glad you're great. You're sure you're great?
I'm wonderful.
Okay, great. Now, I want to thank you before we get started. Cindy was gracious enough to help us out at our Holistic Fair, the Festival of Enlightenment Holistic Fair. She was one of our speakers, so I want to thank you in advance very much for helping us out.
You're welcome, and thank you for inviting me to do that.
Well, again, it was a mutual great thing, so that's good. Now, dreams. Obviously, they're very important to most people, I would say. Everybody dreams, correct?
That's what research shows.
Mm-hmm.
All mammals dream.
Right. So even though somebody says, oh, I never dream, I don't know anything about that, that's not so.
That's correct. Usually what it is they don't remember their dreams.
Right.
They're dreaming, but they have low dream recall.
Mm-hmm. Right.
So they're dreaming underneath.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Now, how long have you been interested in keeping track of your dreams?
Well, since I can remember,
okay.
And I have a really good memory.
Yeah, so that's a couple years, right?
Yeah, yeah, since I was a child.
Okay, really?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Now, did you start writing your dreams down at that time when you were a child, or not necessarily?
Maybe when, more around high school age.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Yeah.
So that's when you started to write the dreams down, keep a journal?
Yes. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So you've done that since high school?
I have, and I do. I go kind of like a lot of people do with a routine or with something they pursue, especially on the creative end. You tend to go in fits and starts where you do it regularly for a while, and then you kind of forget and you get out of the habit. And then every now and then I'll have a really splendid dream, and I'll think, wow, I've got to write this down.
Mm-hmm.
And I'll pull out old dream journals and stuff, and I have a lot of different ones, some of them on my computer, you know, in different documents, others in little notebooks and things. And it's real interesting to look back at dreams that you've had a long time ago. Because when you write it down in a journal, it's usually, I would assume, at least for me, it's very fresh mm-hmm. in my mind. And so it's usually written with a lot of emotion and a certain level of being vivid because it's fresh. So later on to read that, you can recapture those feelings. Whereas if you just remembered a dream from a long time ago that was a pretty cool dream or whatever, you won't remember the details that you would have captured in that journal.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Well, again, though, that takes a lot of self-discipline, though, to really sit down and write down what happened during the night, what dreams you've had. A lot of people just say, well, gee, that was an interesting dream, but forget it. But you right. suggest people do write down their dreams?
Well, if they want to pursue their dreamscapes, if you mm-hmm. will, or their dream lives,
right.
lives, yeah. And you don't really have to necessarily write a narrative, so to speak. You can write key words.
Mm-hmm.
Quite often, real accurate key words that you would have fresh in your mind the next day, for instance, key words can be enough to trigger a lot of memory.
Right, right.
You know, even years later.
Mm-hmm. Right, if it's a very vivid dream.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
So now you've had dreams during your lifetime that has kind of shown you what's going to happen in the future?
That would be called prophetic dreams,
mm-hmm. right.
Or paranormal dreams outside of the realm of normality, I suppose.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I have. I've had many, many of them in my life. And most people have. A lot of people have.
Mm-hmm.
I've talked to a lot of people about it over the years. And I think that probably more people have unusual sorts of dreams like that than they may want to admit to some other people.
Mm-hmm.
But when they talk to someone like me that's real open to dreams, I've studied a lot about dreams, I've written about them, their feelings will come out that they've had certain dreams. For instance, people that'll have a deceased loved one visit them in a dream. I've had a lot of people tell me that over the years, and they'll say, you know, I don't tell many people this, but, and then they'll go on and tell me about Aunt Marcy or whatever coming in, you know, visiting them in their dreams and so forth. And I've always said and known in my gut, if you will, that when that happens to you, to someone, you know it. There's no mistaking it.
Right.
Because of the depth of it, the magnitude of it, it's different. Like, for instance, my father, when he passed away back in 1989, he was 60 years old, and he died suddenly of a stroke. And I always knew, and still do to this day, believe that he had a tremendous amount of unfinished business. And he had a lot of people to say goodbye to, and I wasn't the only one he visited, either. And there were dreams that I would have where he was simply there. He participated, you know, and whatever. But then there were the other dreams that I feel were him reaching across the spirit realm to me.
Mm-hmm.
And they weren't just dreams. They were special dreams. They were paranormal. And
right.
I do believe spiritually he was communicating with me.
Mm-hmm.
And it was real.
Mm-hmm.
And if people have never experienced that, they may say, well, you know, logic dictates that doesn't make sense and what have you. But then there'll be other people say, you know, I didn't believe it until it happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the knowing that comes from experience.
Right. Now, what are some of the things, if you could possibly go into it, that your father conveyed to you through dreams?
Well, my two sisters were not experiencing the contact that I was initially. And I had a dream one night where I was sitting at a kitchen table, which would symbolically represent the family, right? And I was sitting with my sisters, and there were a set of salt and pepper shakers on the table. And we were discussing the fact that Dad was coming to me in dreams. And they were laughing at me and mocking me. And I remember feeling upset, humiliated, frustrated, because I knew it was real, and I knew that there was animosity there because they weren't getting it,
mm-hmm.
but I was. And all of a sudden in the dream, Dad manifested visually to me in the dream, but they couldn't see him. And he reached over and started moving those salt and pepper shakers around. And I remember very vividly, and this was over 20 years ago, both of them just sat back, their eyes got huge, and they just freaked out. And they said, it's real. This is real. And I woke up and thought, oh boy, I just knew that he was going to be doing something because he was quite mischievous. And
a troublemaker?
Yeah, he was a lot of fun. Let's put it that way. My daddy had quite a sense of humor. He was a real character in life and in death. And so time went by, and I think it was around Mother's Day, and we were over at my mom's house, and my mom said to both my sisters, you need to tell her what's happened. And both of them got real weird and said, no, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to talk about it. And I said, what's happened? And they both started crying and said, Dad came to me independently, that he had come to them individually. And one of them saw him in the waking state, saw his shadow, his silhouette in her living room in the evening when she walked past, glanced into her living room as she walked past and saw him sitting in the rocking chair. She freaked out because she knew there's a knowing. There's a certain knowing when you know something like that. And she flipped on the light and the rocking chair was moving.
Mm-hmm.
And she knew it was Dad. And then my other sister visually saw him up at the cottage up in West Branch, the cottage that was our family cottage that he loved dearly. And people from the other side will visit areas like that. They often visit people in dreams or in the waking state, too, around about certain holidays, perhaps around about their birthday time or your birthday, Christmas, the anniversary of their death, they often visit. So that was very vivid and very real. And it was pretty cool for me because I knew what I was experiencing. But for them to participate like that, it gave me validation. One of the biggest dreams, most powerful dreams I had when that I could share with you, is he had passed away in February, and my mom was just devastated because he was young. It was just a horrible shock.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, she had been looking for his tax forms that had come in the mail that he had put somewhere. And, you know, probably a month had gone by or so, whatever, and she knew tax season was coming up, and Dad always took care of the business like that. So she couldn't find the tax papers. I dreamt one night that I walked into her kitchen. I pulled a chair over. I put it up by the kitchen counter. I stepped up on it, opened up the cupboard, reached up in the upper right-hand side, and in between a stack of antique plates, for whatever reason, was his, like, W-2s and his paperwork. And I woke up and thought, oy, 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 you know, because it was, again, it wasn't just a dream. It was a sort of dream that I would wake up feeling almost tired. I always call those a working dream, where you're real busy doing stuff in your dreams that are far beyond rest.
Right.
And I woke up and I thought, oh my gosh, I got to tell my mom this. I knew they were there. I knew that's where these things were. And I phoned her and she said, well, all right, honey, you know, Cindy's having another dream. And she drug that chair over there and I heard her scream.
Mm-hmm.
She got down off the chair. She says, they're there. I have them. You're right. I said, yeah, I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what Dad said.
That's a very weird place, though, to put that kind of form.
It is.
Right.
It is.
But that's a special help that you get, though, from the other side sometimes where they are speaking to you. I know I've heard of one situation where a daughter passed away in a family, and she had bought a lottery ticket prior to her death, and she visited, I forget whether it was the mother or the father, but she said, play these numbers in the state lottery, and they did the same numbers that she had put on another ticket, and it turned out to be a winning ticket. So, I mean, those things are possible. And,
wow.
I mean, it's really amazing that somebody or something can come through the other side and inform you of something here in the physical realm.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, I think that we're closer to the veil of that realm than most of us could possibly imagine.
Right.
Years ago, there was, I don't even know who it was, a woman and I were talking about, probably about my dad, and she used an analogy that I never forgot. She said that when you turn on a fan, like a room fan, just a little tabletop fan, you turn it on and you can see the blades as they start to spin. And as they get faster and faster, they reach a certain point, velocity, where they're not as visible, and sometimes even not really visible at all. I mean, you could stare at it, I guess, and whatever, but you just don't see it like you would when it first starts out. And she said that is the same sort of analogy that you can apply to the vibratory sense of a living person. When we're on the physical plane, we're spinning vibrationally very slowly. We're very dense in terms of matter. When we decease and go wherever we go, we start at a different, we vibrate at a much faster frequency. And that way, we can't be seen. We're not visible. So maybe that's why when someone manifests as a ghost or a spirit, they can only do it for so long because they have to slow themselves down enough for us on the earth plane to see them.
Right.
So
I would just like to mention right now that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This program is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. My special guest this month is Cindy Gray. She is a writer, yoga teacher, handwriting analyst, speaker, and dream expert. And that's quite a bit, isn't it?
Yeah.
But anyway, we are talking about dreams primarily today. Now, do you think that dreams can really help people in life and that it helps give them guidance to address certain problems or situations?
Most definitely, yes. Dreams can help you almost like a rehearsal.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's a sort of dreaming called lucid dreaming, L-U-C-I-D. It's called lucidity or lucid dreaming. And apparently it was one of the requirements for monks to reach enlightenment is to be able to lucidly dream. And what it means is to be able to be conscious in the dream state of the fact that you're sleeping and you're dreaming. And in that consciousness, you can control your dream. So there's a theory that as we dream, we are the director, the producer, we're the actor, the actresses, we're the props, we are the stage, we are everything in our dreams. However, when you're lucidly dreaming, it's more of a hands-on choreography, I suppose. And you can work through issues, you can go places. Some people would connect that with astral projection, too.
Mm-hmm.
And you can control your dreams and use it in a way to rehearse things, learn things, experience things, overcome fears, and so forth. But in general, I think that people can, if they really learn to capture their dreams and listen to them, you can get a lot of guidance from them. You can get a lot of creative and occupational guidance from them as well. Examples of that are huge. There was a woman a long, long time ago who had a really creepy dream. She had two. One night, and then part B was the second night. And she wrote those dreams down. And she ended up writing a novel out of it, which ended up being Frankenstein. So Mary Shelley dreamt the plot for Frankenstein.
Some very profitable dreams then, right?
Yeah, really. I don't know if she lived long enough to see that.
Well,
I don't know.
True.
But I just know she dreamt the plot. Stephen King has dreamt a lot of plots for his novels. And a lot of writers and novelists, even if they don't dream the entire plot, while they're working on a book, and I've done the same thing in my book, The Spirit of Health, that I've written, I would get real sleepy in the afternoon when I was writing full-time on this book, and I would just know, oh, wow, it's like spirit's telling me, you need to go take a little nap. And I knew it would be an inspiring nap.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, probably, I don't know, at least half of those naps, or even maybe more, maybe 8 out of 10 naps, I would wake up from that with immediate guidance on where I had been stuck before. What's her name? Alice Walker. She dreamt The Color Purple. So it's not just creepy novels that people dream.
Right.
The person, I can't remember the name, that figured out the DNA, the benzene molecule, I believe it is. He dreamt that. He dreamt of a snake.
Yeah.
And he woke up with this deep knowing. Aha! It's an epiphany.
Right.
You know, the person, I think it's Kirkle or Kenkle or something like that, that devised the way to capture insulin from the pancreas of a dog initially dreamt it. He dreamt that this dog was the lab rat, basically, the poor dog. But he figured out a way to capture insulin from the animal kingdom, if you will, and ended up using it to help the people with diabetes.
Mm-hmm.
So dreams tap into an area of the mind that is unlimited.
Right.
So in our waking state, we're limited by our beliefs, by our knowledge, or what we even think is our knowledge. We could have so much more knowledge that we don't even realize. But in dreams, we open the door to that. The research shows that sleep itself is vital to health, not just because you need to rest, but because it helps rebuild body tissue. And that's why when people are very physical, athletes will sleep really hard, they're rebuilding muscle tissue that they burned through, basically, when they were doing their thing in the daytime. And dreaming rebuilds brain tissue. So sleep rebuilds body, dream rebuilds brain. And if people are deprived of sleep, and if they're deprived of dream time, you can become ill. And it's like recently a guy I know that's an IT kind of a guy, I'd said something about turning my computer off at night or whatever, and he says, no, leave your computer on at night. And I said, I thought, if I turned it off at night, it would be better. You know, viruses wouldn't slip right in. I'd save electricity, whatever. He said, no, there's going to be uploading of programs that go on that are programmed to do that in the off hours, so to speak, in the times in the middle of the night. And I said, really? Well, that's how dreams work, too, is the body goes through all sorts of hormonal uploading of basically hormonal programming in our body. And it's like a symphony going on. And all sorts of different hormones are regulated. Some are tweaked and activated that aren't necessarily turned on during the daytime or more of a modified version of themselves at night. They work together. And it's like a symphony. And then when you don't get enough sleep, that symphony starts playing off key.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically sets the stage for aging. So sleeping, it's not just, they don't call it beauty sleep for nothing. And they don't say that kids need what's that phrase for the cliche? The kids need their sleep time. Oh, they'll say, if you don't get enough sleep, it'll stunt your growth. It's true. Old wives' tales stick around because of their accuracy.
Right.
Quite often, the inventors of these different wives' tales, if you will, or folk tales, they didn't know the science behind it, but they knew the reality of it because they lived it. And studies show that children, adolescents, they need more sleep than adults do because they are physically growing. And kids will wake up sometimes and say, Mom, my legs ache. Those are growing pains. They're physically, the
right
bones are growing. You know, people that have had head injuries, they tend to go into a deeper dream state because the body's rebuilding brain tissue that was injured during the head injury.
Mm-hmm.
Premature infants are known to spend, God, I forget, it's like 80-90% of their sleep time in REM, in rapid eye movement, because they're dreaming to build their brain tissue of their little teeny brains.
Mm-hmm. What about people in comas? Do they go through a rebuilding process in their brain while they're in a coma? Do you know that at all?
I believe so. Now, I'm not a doctor, certainly, and I don't know about that specifically. From what I've read, they have, there's a thing called an electroencephalograph or an EEG, and when they plug that onto people, into their heads and various parts of their body, they put it in the brain, they'll see the different brain waves, and it's the same type of brain waves that are recorded when people sleep. When they're awake, your brain's active. So when you're in coma, you're in the delta state, which is the deepest part of the brain waves while you're asleep also. So coma is very similar to the sleeping state that where you dream. It's the delta waves.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Now, if you wanted to help guide a certain reaction, I've heard that if you write down something before you go to sleep on a notepad or something, maybe a question that you're concerned about or you're wondering about, could be something to do with your own personal life or, again, you say occupational life, whatever. If you write that down, sometimes you go to sleep, you wake up, you've had a dream, and that helps solve certain problems. Have you known that to be true?
I believe that to be true. I believe it's possible. And again, it's all about intention, too, and what a person sets as their intention. And some people might say, well, of course, if you do this before you go to bed, you're using the power of suggestion to create the window, if you will, opening the window for this to manifest. And even that in itself is pretty fascinating, I think. When you wake up after you've done something like that, and you make some notes on what you dreamt, it may not be exact answers. They could be symbolic answers. They could be archetypal answers and so forth. Freud was one of the first people, well, he thought he was one of the first people to analyze dreams, but he wasn't. He was so egotistical. But he wrote a wonderful book on interpretation of dreams and dream symbolism. He was all about like the latent dream. They call it latent dream material, where it was information that's more specific. He was also quite obsessed with sex and everything. It represented something. Well, a cigar sometimes is only a cigar, you know?
Right.
And Jung came along later on, who was a student of his, and then later on a peer, and he believed that it's not just all the latent content of the dream, it's also the manifest dream. It's also what it means in the reality of the dreamer. And he said, apply the dream scenario to your actual life and see how that rings true for you. And if it doesn't seem to have any bells ringing for you, then that's when he got into the symbolism and the archetypes, where various things mean different things. And I always tell people, you've got to realize that it's how the dream makes you feel.
Mm-hmm.
Like some people might have a dream, for instance, about a snake. And they wake up and they'll look through their handy-dandy dream dictionary, and it's going right. to say betrayal and all these things. But it can also mean rebirth. You know, snakes shed their skin. It can represent change. It can represent betrayal or backstabbing. It can also have religious connotations, too, to do with snake. It just depends on how you feel about those things. I had a dream not too long ago about a lion. It was a beautiful, beautiful. It was a male, big lion, big, beautiful golden head, you know, and I was sitting with him and I was stroking his muzzle and he was letting me touch where his whiskers went into his face and all, and it was so realistic and it was so beautiful. And I remember in the dream thinking, what a gift this is, that this dangerous animal is letting me touch him like this. I had no fear. Now, if I were to look up lion in a dictionary, it probably wouldn't tell me in a dream dictionary
right.
that sort of thing. But I woke up and I thought, that was such a cool feeling. I felt safety. Maybe it was something symbolically telling me to trust nature, to trust my own level of courage, if you will. What does a lion represent to me? You know, those are the questions that I would ask myself.
Right. Yeah, I think that, you know, people don't always realize that. It's just like you said, they just go to their book, their dream Bible, whatever it might be, and they look up what somebody else has written. But again, it's what you interpret that
right.
thing to be in your life. I know I've had dreams where I've dreamed I was up close with a person's face, and I saw a lot of pimples and stuff. And the thing is, the impression that I got was, I know this person warts and all. You know,
oh, okay.
And that, you know, you're seeing imperfections in the skin and stuff.
Right.
And it's outward, and yet, you know, the way I felt about it was that, yeah, okay, I really know this person. You know, warts and all, that's
okay.
the impression, you know. So, I mean, little things like that. You really have to apply it to your life and what you're going through at the time and what it means to you.
Right.
Although, do you feel that some of these books do help people?
Sure, they can.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, they can give you ideas and things. The internet's loaded with all sorts of information on dreams, dream symbology. I've collected dream dictionaries all my life. Even if there's something really hokey looking at a garage sale, I'll buy that. I've probably got 15 dream journals
mm-hmm.
or dream dictionaries
right.
from over the years. And I find a lot of the older ones even more fascinating than the new ones. Maybe because newer dream dictionary authors are so interested in creating something new, you know.
Right.
But some of them will talk about the theory behind various subjects as opposed to flat out black and white, you know, you dream about this, it means that. You know, really, there's nothing that's black and white. There's always that in-between area that's subject to interpretation.
Mm-hmm. Right. And again, I just want to remind everybody that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This show is Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. My guest this month is Cindy Gray. She's a writer, yoga teacher, handwriting analyst, speaker, and dream expert. and we are talking about dreams right now. Now, when people do dream, and sometimes you'll hear them say, wow, I had too much to dream last night, and they wake up even more exhausted than when they went to bed. So do you think that people are really working through some of their problems, some of their traumas that they're facing in everyday life, and that by the time they do wake up, they are exhausted because it's almost like physically going through some of these situations?
Exactly, yes. The brain is like a sponge. And when there's been traumas or something that you need to work through, your dreams are slowly wringing that sponge out and helping clear it. Dreams help remove psychic debris.
Yeah, I've got a lot of debris, so that's why I was giggling. So go ahead, though. I didn't mean to interrupt.
That's okay. Yeah, people, it seems, that are becoming more stressed out. Stress is on an all-time rise. Now, a lot of times people may say, oh, that's not true. We just think it is or whatever. I believe that things are speeding up in the universe, on the planet, in our culture. And I think collectively we can have dreams that are depleting, if you will, or very enlightening but still exhausting, because we're having communication collectively with other people that are dreaming at that moment.
Oh, really?
Yes.
So, I mean, it could be interconnected with different souls throughout the world, possibly?
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm. I think there's a whole lot going on in the dream state and in other dimensions than we can begin to comprehend right now. But I think we're working on it. I think it's part of human evolution.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a striving also toward a deeper connection spiritually. And I think that's why people are feeling such a crunch from global disasters, political uprisings. I mean, there's political powers that are breaking on the globe right now. This is 2011. I mean, we know what's just gone on or is still going on in many countries, Tunisia, Libya, Egypt. Whole governments that are splitting apart. You know, there's massive global environmental things going on. And people are stressed out by all this. And even if they say, oh, I don't watch the news anymore, it's all bad news, they still feel it. And they feel it from coworkers. They feel it because their own jobs are at risk, their own security. We're reaching a point, I think, in civilization and in the human evolutionary path where change is so tumultuous. And that a lot of that stress is being wrung out in our dreams.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's important to note our dreams.
Right.
And really listen to them.
Right. So it can be a type of release if a person's really feeling stress through their job or whatever, so that they feel, I don't know, perhaps better by the time they wake up, hopefully anyway.
Yeah, hopefully. I don't know if they'll consciously think that they're feeling better about it, but it might release some steam out of that pressure cooker, you know?
Right. Well, I think, you know, in today's society with computers and everything else, they really bombard people and their senses, and it is a different time. So I think a lot of people are under stress that perhaps in the past would not have been, but because of today's age, it does make a difference.
And the speed of which we learn things that are happening on the other side of the earth.
Mm-hmm.
Before, we'd have to wait for the newspaper, you know?
Right.
And now it's a matter of seconds before the news hits the wires, hits the internet. And it is a worldwide web. It is a web encircling the entire planet. In a lot of ways, it might be getting a little tight. It might be choking us a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, we're going through it.
Right. Now, it's been my experience, and perhaps it's been yours, but do you feel that dreams are prophetic in that they can tell you what possibly might be going on in your life? Perhaps you have a dream about a person that you don't recognize in this dream, but maybe weeks down the road you realize, oh, okay, it was this person here that, you know, I didn't know at the time. Because usually it's been my experience when I have dreams, if I know that person, I know them right away immediately in that dream.
Yeah.
If I don't know them or I don't know a place, then it's been my experience where I haven't experienced that place yet or that person. Or I'm not supposed to know about that person or place. Do you find that to be true?
I'm not thinking that I have had that myself, but I believe that you believe it.
Yes, I do.
I believe that that we connect with people on a soul level from other lifetimes. I'm a reincarnationist. I'll put that out there right now. I was raised Catholic, but I've always been a reincarnationist. And I believe that we come into this life with a certain agenda, if you will. And I think our dreams can give us direction as to what we're supposed to be doing to follow that agenda. And it's not an agenda for how to make more money or how to do this or that. It's an agenda for evolution, personal soul evolution. And we have a soul group of people that we're supposed to be involved with. And those sorts of people you're talking about could be the people in your soul group. And you recognize them in the dream state because you do know them.
Right.
You just haven't met them yet this time.
Right. So, Gare, again, the fact that, okay, you have a dream about a person, maybe you've known them in a past life, would you say? Would that be a possibility?
Oh, definitely.
Mm-hmm. But you just don't know them this lifetime, or maybe you're not supposed to.
Or you don't recognize them yet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, and they can come. I believe that we reincarnate into different genders. I'm not sure about the transmutation or transmigration of animal souls, although personally, a lot of times people might say, well, you know, there's a difference between a human soul and animal souls. To me, this might sound a little heretical. I think that animals are probably even on a higher plane.
Really? Than human
because,
beings?
Because they are at our mercy in so many ways. And I believe that animals can be like angels in disguise, sent here to test human compassion, and we're failing miserably.
Yes.
We are...
Well, we're working on it.
Yeah, I'm changing subjects, and I don't mean to, I'm sorry. But I've had dreams about animals that I have loved and lost over the years, and they've come back to me. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, my dog Molly died last June 26th. And she was a Gordon Setter. There's Irish Setter, English Setter, and Gordon Setters. And that Gordon Setter is the color of Rottweiler, or a Doberman, the black and red. Mm-hmm. And she was magnificent. Oh, she was just amazing. She was 13. She would have been 13 years old in October, she would have been. Anyway, she passed away, and I knew that she was going, and she was ill, and I finally decided that this Saturday morning was going to be the day we were going to have her put to sleep. We were going to have her euthanized. And I was real upset by it. And I'm feeling good because I can talk about it now because it was a while I couldn't really talk about it. But I was up most of the night with her because she was ill. And I laid down about 4 o'clock in the morning. And I thought, I've got to rest my mind so I can be up for this the next day. And she'd fallen asleep. My husband was asleep. I laid down. And I dreamt that I had walked through the kitchen. I opened the door onto the deck. And out there stood my grandfather, long deceased, Grandpa Sam. And he was my Tennessee grandpa, and he was a hunter, and he had hunting dogs, too. And there he stood on the deck. And he didn't say anything, but there was a communication, a nonverbal communication. And Molly came walking up beside me, and I let her go, symbolically and physically in the dream. I let her go, and she walked over to Grandpa Sam. Now, he'd never met that dog. He's been dead since the 80s, anyway. And he walked over to her and he embraced her. And when I woke up, I knew that I was getting clarification. And I believe that was spirit contact from my grandfather.
Mm-hmm.
I really do. And he also looked younger. He looked younger than I knew him as, even. And often when deceased people visit you in dreams, they look healthy. They look vibrant. You can often see their aura. They're in their peak, almost. And so the next day, when we took her to the vet, and he'd given her a Valium for a little while so we could stroke her and love her and talk to her. And I told her, now, I said, now you look for Grandpa on the other side, and he's going to take you hunting. And you're going to go chase those squirrels, and you're going to do all the things that you've wanted to do. And I believe that she's going to be there when I cross over.
Mm-hmm.
And I really think that animals, elderly, children and disabled people are all here to help teach us compassion and love, because we will be all those things at some point. We will experience all that. And it was just a beautiful dream to have Grandpa basically say to me, it's okay.
Right.
The time is right, and I'll be here when she crosses.
Mm-hmm. So that must have made you feel a little bit better anyway,
considering
the circumstances.
Tremendously feeling better. Yes, mm-hmm. I did. I felt at peace. I had a sense of peace that I don't think I would have had. I knew the time was right physically for her, but I didn't want to go. I didn't want to let her go, you know.
Right.
And it was my own self that wanted her, you know, my own selfishness. Right. She was ill, and she'd been ill for a while.
Right.
And she wasn't going to get any better.
Right.
So, yeah, it helped me a lot. And I think it helped her.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm willing to bet, not that it could be proven, but that he was there for her on the other side.
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
She went to him.
Right. Well, it's a beautiful dream, really. And I mean, mm-hmm. that probably helped you through the healing process, too. I'm sure that helped you get over it perhaps a little bit quicker anyway. I know it's always traumatic because a pet does become part of the family.
Yes. You know, yeah, she was my little girl. And I don't know that it would help you get over it more quickly. I think it helped me deal with it more. It helped me cope with it more peacefully.
Mm-hmm. Knowing that you made the right decision.
Yeah, and to not cling to the material world of it, the physicality of it, but to embrace the spirituality of it.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of people have dreams about their animals that have deceased, and quite often they'll see them even in the waking state, just out of the corner of their eye. And they'll think, what was that? And they have this flash idea, this thought in their mind, oh, it was my cat, or oh, it was my dog. But then they also feel like if they verbalize that, people will think they're crazy. The crazy word. You know, I've had more people say to me, people confide things in me, by the way. They tell me things that they'll say, I don't tell other people this. I don't want them to think I'm crazy, but. And then they'll tell me what so many others have shared in similar ways. And maybe it's an example of people being judged too harshly for things that are very sentimental and spiritual. But
right.
I don't know. I digress.
Right. Well, no, I think that plays a part. I mean, they might think they're a little crazy themselves if they have certain dreams, especially if they do come true. It's like, what's going on? What's happening? They may not really realize that it is possible to let them know or give them a window of what the future might hold.
Right. Well, it wasn't that long ago. That would have been considered witchcraft. It could have been considered heresy. People were burned at the stake for mm-hmm. expressing things like that. Not that long ago in human culture,
right.
in human evolution.
Right.
You know, we think that's a long time ago, but when you're really in a blink of an eye, time goes by really fast.
Right.
And
in the history of mankind.
Yes. Yeah. And humans are real quick to get rid of what they don't understand.
Mm-hmm. Right. Definitely. They don't want to embrace it whatsoever.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. Yeah.
Because it's evil, perhaps.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I just want to take time out once again to remind everybody that you're listening to WHFR.FM, the station making waves. This program is called Metaphysically Speaking. I'm your host, Mike Holloway. Today, my special guest is Cindy Gray. She's a writer, yoga teacher, handwriting analyst, speaker, and dream expert. Now, I know you do speak about dreams, so when you do speak about this to certain groups, do a lot of people come up to you afterwards and they want to pull you aside and say, I've had this dream here. What does this mean? What does that
yeah.
mean?
Oh,
you get
yeah.
a lot of that?
Yeah, in all the different presentations. I do a variety of different subjects, and people always want to chat afterward. I've learned to schedule that part of the time because I can expect that. And that's a wonderful thing. That
mm-hmm.
means I did a good job.
Right.
You know, I always try to include a question and answer time, though, during the presentation. And a lot of times when I've done dream presentations, different people will show up and they've got their dream journals. They'll have notes. They're dreamologists.
Right.
They're practicing
they're
dreamers.
They're serious, yes.
Yeah, they're serious dreamers. Yeah, they're mm-hmm. serial dreamers. Ooh. I have to use that. So, yeah, they're wanting to talk. They're wanting to be heard, too,
mm-hmm.
about their dreams.
Right. They probably want validation for their own interpretation of their dreams to see if you agree, perhaps.
Yeah, and I think, too, they know. Clearly, they know that I appreciate dreams. And a lot of people don't remember dreams, or if they do, they're real sketchy. They're in bits and pieces. I dream vividly in color. I've dreamt music in dreams. I've astrally projected in dreams. I've had a lot of amazing experiences in dreams that I don't think are that unusual.
Mm-hmm.
I think a lot of people experience it, not a lot necessarily remember it, but there are some that do. And I know, for instance, you know, I may express a dream, and someone will say, God, how do you remember all that? Wow, how do you remember all that detail? However, I'm a detail-oriented person, and there's a theory that you dream what you're thinking about, too. You know, that's why when you watch your dog sleeping and you start seeing them,
right.
And they do their things and there goes the legs, mm-hmm. they're chasing squirrels
right.
in their dreams. Well, we chase ourselves in our dreams.
Mm-hmm.
You know, occupational dreams are huge. You have a food server, a waitress or a waiter wait on you, and they're giving you really great service. You ask them if they have waitress dreams or waiter dreams, and I'll tell you, the good servers, they do.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah.
Yes, I used to be a waiter myself. You're talking about the stressful dreams where maybe you can't seem to get caught up.
Exactly.
It's very stressful.
Yeah, there's no plates left.
Right, again, you're tossing, you're turning. Yes, I've had those dreams, and it's like, yeah.
That's an occupational dream.
Right.
Yeah.
You just can't quite get over the hump, so to speak.
Right.
Get everything taken care of.
And usually, it's because you care.
Mm-hmm.
They say students that are lousy students, not because they can't achieve academically, but they don't care to achieve. They're lousy. They're poor students because they don't want to show up, basically. They don't dream about failure. It's the A and the B students that dream about failing the exams because their mind goes toward that.
Mm-hmm.
You know? There's nurses that dream about walking down hospital corridors that never end.
Right.
They just keep walking. You know, because that's what they're dreaming. That's what they're living.
Right.
When I used to be a court reporter years ago, I was a court reporter almost 15 years ago, or for about 15 years, and it's been, well, I guess about 15 years ago, too. I used to have dreams where I would show up at court, to court, because I freelance, so I was always in a different courtroom. So I always brought my own equipment. I had to set up my equipment in the courtroom, too. And I'd show up, I'd have no equipment. I'm like, oh, my God, how am I going to take the record? I don't have any equipment. So I'd pull out, and I hear I'd have a pencil, number 2 lead pencil.
Mm-hmm.
And I'd start writing, and everybody's talking, and the lead's snapping over and over.
Right.
You know, I've had judges tell me that they have dreams that they can't find their robe. They're on their way to court for the day, and they can't find their judicial robe. I remember one judge telling me that he continually dreams that he fails the bar exam. You know, that was a long time ago he took
right.
the bar exam. But you dream about what you care about.
Mm-hmm.
So, and that could be a reason, too, that people will have dreams about deceased loved ones. And so, as Freud might say, well, that's wish fulfillment. Of course, you want to see them again. And I've had dreams about my father, where he was one of the players in the dream, and there was nothing more than that. There might have been some symbology thrown in there and some goodwill, if you will, but then there's the other dreams with a capital O, where I know that it was communication from the other side.
Right.
And there's a lot of people that will, that's the sort of things that people will share with me after a presentation. You know, they'll talk about their spouse a lot of times. It's usually parents, spouse, or children. There's nothing worse than outliving your child, you know.
Yes.
And a lot of people will say, my daughter's come to me, or my husband, and so forth. And sometimes, for some people, it's one visit. And often it's at the foot of the bed. They'll see and feel them at the foot of their bed. And it's a form of goodbye, you know? So, and there's healing power to that, too. And especially if a person is receptive. It could be traumatic for some others, but it should be, hopefully, more of a healing.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right. But if a person is more apt to pay attention to their dreams and be more aware of that, I would think that, as a general rule, they probably remember more of their dreams and things like that, and they're open to different interpretations of what might be going on in a dream, as opposed to somebody that doesn't really seem to remember dreams or take them too highly. I mean, they don't really think that there's really too much information in those dreams.
Right.
Do you find that to be true?
You've nailed it, and research shows that, what you just said. I've read various different books on dreaming, the nature of dreams, the science of dreams, and they say that people that are into self-help, people that are into self-revelation, self-help, personal exploration, health-wise, mental, spiritual, physical, they tend to remember their dreams more.
Mm-hmm. Right.
They have higher dream recall. And like I say, they've proven that all mammals dream, but there's different levels of recall. And just to add this in, because I think it's important, a lot of times people will say, well, I don't remember my dreams, I just don't. Well, then they're probably not sleeping deeply enough to dip into it to where they can remember it. Sometimes people will say, well, I'll tell them, you know, are you drinking coffee later in the day? Are you doing a lot of chocolate or Coca-Cola or anything with a stimulant or a pharmaceutical stimulant for that matter, or an over-the-counter stimulant? Stimulant's a stimulant. And they'll say, oh, no, no, I can drink coffee all day and it doesn't bother me. So maybe they're sleeping, but they're having restless leg syndrome. It's the caffeine triggering the muscular activity that's keeping them at a lesser brain wave. Right. Rather than dipping down into your theta and your delta waves, they're staying up higher on their activity level. So they're not recalling those dreams. They're not resting deeply to dream.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to dream. You have to get into the point where you can, whether you remember it or not, you need to dip into the dream level in order to get rid of that, all that psychic debris, and rebuild your brain tissue. And stress can oh, geez. I mean, you see the brain scans of people with severe dementia and Alzheimer's and stuff. There's holes in those brains. I mean, those brains are deteriorating physically. I'm not sure the connection between dreaming and Alzheimer's. Now that I think about it, I think that would be a really neat thing to research, is the effect of how dreams affect the structure of the brain. They say it rebuilds brain tissue, so I would think that it would be a way to help protect you from memory loss, from brain loss, mm-hmm. you know. So, yeah. And people often will say, oh, if I eat, Mexican food before I go to bed, or spicy sauces and what have you, then I don't sleep, or I don't remember my dreams. It's because they're digesting spices and all that the body's involved with digestion and dealing with that, so that inhibits their dreaming ability. It doesn't give you bad dreams. It kind of preoccupies your body with the food, you know, dealing with the spices and the processing of it. That mm-hmm. can interfere with the sleep and with the dreams.
Right.
You know?
I'm just curious, would you happen to know if a person is blind, do they dream?
Oh, yes. Yes. Matter of fact, Helen Keller wrote a book called Clear Seeing at Night, or no? What's that called? I don't remember the name of it, but all you have to do is Google Helen Keller and her books. She had phenomenal dreams where she could see at night, and she describes them in vivid detail, and it's beautiful. And she dreamt in color.
Really?
Oh, yeah. And she called it her precious dream time, where she had clear seeing at night. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a connection, too, because melatonin is it's called the darkness hormone. And at night, when back in the olden days, the caveman days, if you will, or the days before a lot of our electronic gadgetry, when the sun started to set, people were more affected by that. It was like farmers. When the sun went down, they were ready for bed. They'd worked hard all day physically. But it wasn't just that. It was also the hormonal melatonin that would kick in, and it's called circadian rhythms, and it's the circle or the cycle of your waking and sleeping states. So when your melatonin kicks in, it tells your body it's time to get ready to sleep. Well, there's a connection between estrogen and melatonin, and research shows that blind women have a lesser incidence of breast cancer because they have a more balanced melatonin estrogen level.
Mm-hmm. Right, because they're not really affected by exterior things as much as people with sight.
The light mm-hmm. that basically, you know, you hear about the third eye, you read about the third eye. Well, there is something there, and it's the pineal gland back there. And that's what is our light detector, basically. And, that's what gets affected by melatonin. And that's what affects melatonin, is the light, the changing light. And then in the morning, you'll have your daylight hormone starts to kick in, and you begin to wake up.
Right. So again, back in the day, I mean, before artificial lights and everything else, it was all cycles. Obviously, the farmers would probably sleep a little more during the winter when they couldn't really do the work they were supposed to. But in the summer, more daylight, they were out there longer. Would that be a possibility?
Definitely. Oh, mm-hmm. yeah. They were much more connected, reliant, and dependent upon the cycles of nature, the cycles of themselves, their own ways of being,
mm-hmm.
you know. And the cycles were more sacred. I think, back then. I mean, you look at even a lot of the Gothic, you know, cathedrals and churches and every the structures, architecture, even Stonehenge, those were all built in accordance with sunlight and moonlight. And they were often used as calendars, sometimes mm-hmm. thought of as rudimentary calendars. Other times, research is showing now, these were really precise calendars, you know. So right. those were souls on the planet at that time that were in concert with the cycles of nature.
Mm-hmm. Now, if somebody wants to contact you, how can they do so?
Well, I have a website, and it's www.CindyGray, that's CindyGray.biz, B-I-Z, so it's CindyGray.biz. And my business phone number is 734-266-2734. And my address, I have a business address, it's P.O. Box 446, and that's in Farmington, 446. And the zip is 48332. And my email address is info@CindyGray.biz.
Mm-hmm. So that covers everything, right?
It covers it all.
Mm-hmm. Any last thoughts you want to say about dreams? How can dreams really help a person throughout life? What would you say about that?
Well, I would say don't discount the wisdom
mm-hmm.
that you get in the night when you sleep. And really take a look at how much sleep time you're getting. You know, there's a saying, you can't have a dream come true if you don't have a dream. And there's a lot more to that than just the you know, the cliche of it. People are not getting enough sleep. Children are not getting enough sleep.
Right.
And our society is suffering from it. And even people will go to sleep. They say, well, I'm in bed by 8, but the TV's on till 1 a.m., you know. Even when they're asleep, they're hearing what's going on that TV.
Right.
Plus, two, the electromagnetic field coming off of it. I'm a firm believer in we're just inundated with electric juice all around us, and people are overstimulated. And I think often misdiagnosed with ADD, depression, all sorts of things. Not that those things aren't real, but I think that we are our own worst enemy. We're a 24/7 society, and everything is available all the time. I remember when I was a kid, at a certain time, that's when the TV went off, and it started to have just snow, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of people nowadays that think, well, what do you mean when the TV went off? TV never goes off.
Right, not nowadays.
Yeah, nothing ever goes off.
Mm-hmm.
And we need that time to hear ourselves think.
Right.
And really, when you sleep, and then when you dip into the beauty of dreaming, that's when you can really hear yourself think.
Mm-hmm.
And the more you give yourself the opportunity to hear that, the more precise the information will be. It's like learning a language.
Right.
You just don't jump into it immediately and you're fluent.
Mm-hmm.
So give it a chance.
Right. But then again, I have heard the saying that big dreamers never sleep. Is that true?
Nah.
No. Big dreamers have to sleep sometime, right?
They better sleep.
Yeah. Otherwise, those big dreams won't come to fruition.
Right.
But Cindy, thank you very much for being on the show. I really appreciate it. And once again, thank you for speaking at our holistic fair. I do appreciate that as well.
You're very welcome. Thank you.
I just want to thank my guest for this edition of Metaphysically Speaking, Cindy Gray. I want to thank her for coming in again. She was on the show recently back in November of 2010, and she was gracious enough to do this edition of the show. I also want to thank my producer, Brandon McKay, for helping me out. I always appreciate his help as well. And as many of you loyal listeners know, we just recently had our third Festival of Enlightenment Holistic Fair on March 26th. And it was a huge success. Very, very, very huge success. And without a doubt, it was our best fair yet. And I would like to thank many, many people. First and foremost, I have to express my sincere thanks to Penny and Howard Golden, owners and publishers of Body, Mind, Spirit Guide, for all of their tremendous support and guidance. And that started at our very first holistic fair. So I do appreciate all their help and advice. I would also like to thank the following: the incredible crowd that was at the festival, the awesome management and staff of WHFR for their assistance, the fabulous vendors, readers, and body healers who participated, our great speakers in the order of their appearance, Deb Foggio, Camille Procaccini, Cindy Gray, and Tiffany Anton, all of the wonderful people who donated their services and or products, and the fantastic musicians that performed at our event as well. I want to give special thanks to WHFR General Manager Susan McGraw and our promotion coordinator, Lisa Fakir, and a very, very special thank you to my executive assistant, and that was her term, not mine, but that's what she called herself. And that young lady is Lynn Grunst. I want to thank her for her outstanding effort in helping to put this fair together. We plan to make this event bigger and better every year, and we hope you will be able to join us for next year's Festival of Enlightenment Holistic Fair. Once again, I just want to remind everybody that we'll be back next month, Tuesday, May 17th, so be sure to join us again for another edition of Metaphysically Speaking. Once again, I just want to thank everybody for listening. Have a great day.
This is an official station of the MAEB. The Michigan Association of Educational Broadcasters was formed in 1977 to support your local high school and college radio stations. These stations serve the community and create alternative programming. But most importantly, they discover and train the next generation of broadcasters. For more information on the MAEB and its affiliates, visit www.maeb.org.
Are you hiding an addiction problem? You don't know where to go or who to talk to? We understand. Call Narcanon for a free and confidential consultation. You don't have to go it alone. Call Narcanon, 877-413-3073. That's 877-413-3073. Or drugsknow.com.
Have you ever considered a career in TV, radio, film production, or electronic media production? If you have, then now it's time to turn your dream into a reality. The Associate in Arts degree in Telecommunication at Henry Ford Community College is designed for the student interested in the career areas of advertising, public relations, journalism, and program production for radio, television, film, and multimedia. Both classroom academic knowledge and creative skills are combined with real-world assignments and experience so as to provide a solid foundation for the completion of a four-year telecommunications degree at a transfer institution. For more information about the telecommunications degree offered right here at Henry Ford Community College, contact Professor Susan McGraw at 313-845-9842 or sign up today by calling 1-800-585-HFCC or by logging on to hfcc.edu.
WHFR, Dearborn.
If it's indie rock and pop you're after, tune in to One Chord to Another on 89.3 WHFR.FM every Tuesday night from 10 p.m. until midnight. You might just hear your new favorite band. That's One Chord to Another on the station making waves, 89.3 WHFR.FM.